It took me a long time to get the hang of driving a car. Back in high school, my dad nervously sat in the passenger seat, gripping the sides of that seat as I slowly maneuvered around obstacles behind the local grocery store. I refused to go above 5 or so miles an hour. I was never a speed freak, and it seemed insane to go any faster in what was basically a pile of glass and sharp metal. I was the opposite of a confident or proficient driver. But eventually the day came to take my driver's examination. My dad took me to the DMV, and while he waited, he practiced his, "You'll do better next time, sweetie. It's okay. Lots of people take the test more than once." Speech. Because of course I wasn't going to pass the exam. I drove 20 miles under the speed limit all the time, and when oncoming traffic came, I got so far over into the opposite lane, into my lane, that I was almost on the sidewalk. I didn't want to hit anybody, at least not any drivers. I couldn't park, I couldn't merge without completely stopping the car first. But while my dad practiced his condolences talk, somehow I was achieving the bare minimum score to pass the exam. The tester said, "Now, you need a lot more practice," but all I heard was, "You passed!" Oh, a terrible teenage driver on the road, driving her loud and distracting friends around while listening to loud and distracting music on a tape player. It's amazing I lived through that first year as a licensed driver. It's probably fortunate that the only vehicle I had access to was my dad's huge old minivan, safe and slow and lumbering. And there were times on the road when I wasn't sure I would make it through that year. There was a rural highway, Route 4, that ran near our house, and I decided one Sunday I would take Route 4 down to church to go to youth group on Sunday night. I merged in my customary way of completely forgetting to check to see if anyone else was on the road, and I just barreled onto the highway singing REM at the top of my lungs, completely oblivious to the world. The driver of a red pickup truck behind me didn't appreciate my merging technique, since it meant he had to slam on his brakes and squeal into the next lane. He made his displeasure known pretty quickly by closely tailing me, forcing me to accelerate so I didn't get rear-ended. And then he would come around and get in front of my car and slam on the brakes, so I had to quickly stop. He did it 3 or 4 times. Every time he screamed, "Learn to drive!" when he passed me. And finally, I just pulled over on the side of the embankment and burst into tears, and he took off with a particular finger raised in a salute as I cried. I was shaking. I was a nervous wreck. I cut him off, and he got his revenge. So what is it about revenge anyway? Why does it feel so good to get back at a person who has done something bad to us? In Western culture, we tend to think of revenge as the yin to the yang of forgiveness. Revenge is depraved and forgiveness is divine. Good people forgive and bad people seek vengeance. But neuroscientists and anthropologists have discovered, like everything, it's more complicated than a simplistic moral choice. It turns out that even in the animal kingdom, revenge is a teaching tool. Chimps, monkeys, birds, and even some fish, who knew fish were this smart, use revenge to deal with excessive, aggressive behavior and to encourage cooperative behavior. If a chimp is too violent, if he plays too roughly with the young, or they don't do their fair share of chores, revenge is used to teach them how to behave. Psychiatrist and theologian Michael McGuell believes that throughout our time on Earth, humans have used revenge to instruct each other on how to behave in ways that better serve the needs of the group. Revenge serves 3 functions in human society. 1. The threat of possible revenge deters people from harming each other. So let's think about the school playground. Maybe when the teacher is looking the other way, Johnny wants to steal Stevie's Batman figurine. However, Johnny knows that taking the figurine means Stevie will probably retaliate and take his pudding cup during lunch. The threat of the lost pudding cup means Johnny leaves Stevie's Batman alone and Batman remains with his original owner. 2. Revenge as a way to deter a second victimization. So let's say Johnny isn't dissuaded by the threat of a lost pudding cup. And he goes ahead and he takes Stevie's Batman. Stevie retaliates not only by taking Johnny's pudding cup, but by dumping his glass of water into Johnny's lap at lunchtime, so it looks like he wet his pants. All the kids tease Johnny, and in his embarrassment and lack of dessert, teach him not to steal. Maybe not to steal at all, not just from Stevie. 3rd, and this is my favorite. The third function of revenge is fascinating. Revenge is a way of reforming freeloaders. Let's say Stevie and Johnny decide to team up with a few other kids and build a treehouse. The kids collect scrap wood from all their neighbors and they haul it into the woods. Gracie and Stevie climb up the tree and Alicia and Sophie hand lumber up to them. It is hard work and the kids get really hot and sweaty. Gracie gets a splinter and Stevie accidentally hammers his thumb. They are exhausted, but the promise of this treehouse keeps them working. Except for Johnny, what is with this kid? When it's time to haul the wood, he suddenly hears his mother calling. As the other kids haul wood up into the tree and hammer it into place, he plays with dandelions between his fingers, sitting in the grass. The other kids are annoyed. Johnny isn't helping at all, and you know he's going to want to play in this awesome treehouse. Gracie, Sophie, Alicia, and Stevie have a quiet meeting, and they decide that because Johnny is being so lazy, he has to build treehouse roof all by himself. The other kids head home for lemonade and snacks. Well, Johnny tries to get the lumber up the tree and nail it into place all by himself. It is really hard, and it teaches him not to be a freeloader. He learns he has to contribute to the collective efforts of the group. So revenge, in the animal kingdom at least, is often an effective way to keep a community running. Neuroscientists found that the desire for revenge activates the same part of your brain that lights up when you are pursuing a goal. Since in some cases the desire for revenge is the desire to keep a community afloat. So revenge isn't always a bad thing. In the past, we have discussed how complicated forgiveness is and how sometimes it can be better for us and for our community if we don't forgive right away. Turns out revenge is the same way. Sometimes it's a useful tool and sometimes it's just our ego wanting us to punish people. So how do we know when our desire for revenge is of the community building kind and when it's just us being egocentric? Because there's no doubt that revenge can be a horrible and violent thing. Think of suicide bombers. Think of all the Muslims who were targeted after the 9/11 attacks. Think of the never-ending time and money wasting of Democrats trying to get back at Republicans and Republicans trying to get back at Democrats. Revenge can be an exhausting and vile thing. So when we, as individuals or as a society, feel the desire for revenge, how do we know if it's productive revenge or just vengefulness? We Unitarian Universalists respect 7 principles as our guides for decision making. They're not creeds and they're not promises we have to ascribe to. But they're ethical standards that remind us of our place in a larger world, community. The 7 principles are basically, it's not just about you. Plus some details. The sixth of our seventh principle is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all beings. This principle encourages us to live lives that build a world community in which every person is treated with integrity and feels safe and is treated fairly. The sixth principle emboldens every single one of us to see ourselves as co-creators of that community. So, in seeking revenge, are you co-creating a world community? Let's go back to my incident with the red pickup truck. Did nearly causing an accident contribute to our goal of world community? No. Did it feel good for the driver to vent his anger at my, hey, I admit it, terrible driving? Yes, probably. Almost definitely it felt good. But that's not justifiable revenge. That's just the ego having a field day. Feeling good, unfortunately, isn't a useful way to judge whether something is good for our world or not. So when is revenge justifiable and when is it unethical? Anthropologists found that in societies where revenge is the most utilized as a correctional tool, there are high levels of police brutality, a lack of citizen representation in governing, and poverty that requires people to work together to make their most basic needs. So food, water, shelter. People have to work together to make those things happen. Makes sense. When rulers are corrupt or insufficient, people will band together and find ways to create a safer community. Sometimes this means horrible and unethical things happen, but sometimes this group regulation works and individuals learn to contribute to team efforts and not abuse each other. Because even if the authorities aren't watching or don't care, their community holds them accountable. Hopefully, most of us will rarely find ourselves in a situation where revenge is the best answer to a conflict in our community. The driver of the red pickup truck lived in a world of police officers he could call to report my terrible driving. He lived in a world in which correctives didn't have to be applied personally. So the first question necessary when considering revenge is always, is someone else in charge of this? Are they capable of this? Is this already handled in a way? Does my society have ways to discourage this behavior without me inventing a punishment, taking this into my own hands? Unless you live in the animal kingdom, the answer will usually be yes, society has it covered. But if not, the second question needs to be related to the sixth principle. Will my actions contribute to a just society? Will this decision aid in the creation of a world where people's voices are heard, where needs are met, and where we all live in a safe environment? If not, your urge for revenge is just your ego clamoring for attention, which is normal, but not helpful. If so, it's time to make justice. But everybody knows we don't need another vengeful driver on the road.